This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 17. Your home for everything modern day wrestling. Happy or sad, angry or glad. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I am your soothsayer, Scott Criscolo. And we've got a very emotional show tonight because we've got some very fragile guys on the roundtable. It's been a very rancorous couple of days in Place to Be Nation since Raw Monday night. So we got some very exposed nerves, which is going to make this really fun. The Core Four is with us in Moss tonight, so let's dive in. We'll begin with my favorite person on the planet. He is a Place to Be Nation regular, of course, also the purveyor of Marvel.com. Mr. Benjamin Morse.
Hey, Scott. After the last few days, when I heard the favorite person on the planet introduction, I was sure it was going not my way, but I'm glad it still landed here.
Those things will never change, Ben.
Yeah, no, pulling back the curtain on the backstage political drama here at Place to Be Nation. It's very when they get around to doing the unauthorized movie, yes, on Lifetime, it's gonna be quite a story.
The unauthorized. Who's going to play it? I don't want to know. All right, Ben, good to have you on. Next
glad
up,
to be back.
The guy who has the most exposed nerves. I have to watch him tonight. He may talk three times as fast as he normally does. An unbelievable contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. He is the Bengal of the Bayou, Mr. Andrew Reich.
So you're saying I have exposed nerves?
Yes, your nerves are frayed. You're very sensitive because of...
Well, speaking of which, I am not saying that in any way that I was involved in nipple nudie gate, but I did it.
Are you talking about Jackson's?
I did it.
You're talking about Jackson's, yeah, nip slip at Fully Loaded 98? Oh, no, never mind. The thing, no, everybody forgets, because that's the same show that had Sable's handprint boobs, was Jacqueline's nip slip there. So, anyway, Reich, enough with nips. Pleasure as always. Next, the guy who's going to counsel Reich off of the ledge, another one of my favorite people, co-author of The High Spot on PlaceToBeNation.com, and the guy who eventually, for Christmas, will get me my Jervis Cotton Belly t-shirt, Mr. Steve Willey.
Of course I will, because we are gentle, and we love each other here very much. And don't forget about the tugboat nip slip that we watched on episode 331.
That's right. On the podcast. Tugboat nip slip on our Raw rewatch earlier in the week. That is correct. Steve, pleasure as always. Finally, a guy who searches out nip slips. He is a Place to Be Nation original, Mr. Jordan Duncan.
I don't search them out. I provide them to the world. You can follow me on Instagram. I've got plenty of my own nip slips to be viewed.
He also has a username on 4chan, but he'll never get that one away.
He's an Andre the Giant nip slip. No.
I have to say, every intro you do, I think, oh, this one could be me. My favorite person in the world, oh, this could be me, you know?
Well, Ben thought it was going to be you after...
I did.
I could counsel Andrew off a ledge or push him off a ledge.
You
depends on how I'm doing that night.
I think we both at the same time.
You're a Christian. You're in the same boat as me, buddy.
Okay. Name of the Father and of the Son. Never mind. All right. Guys, I've been looking forward to tonight's show since 11:06 on Monday. Because I don't want to say we pulled the curtain, Benjamin, but let's just say our pre-production for this show was animated, to say the least. Tonight we're going to do, obviously, two segments. We're going to do pros and cons tonight for two topics. We are going to talk the network tonight, because I know everybody was ready to talk about it, as we are pretty much past the first six months. So we'll do pros and cons of the network in our second segment. Segment one tonight, after the second consecutive less than thrilling Raw, as we head towards Night of Champions, coming up September 21st at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. Pros and cons of the product. Because I feel like we've spent the last, 48, 72 hours pissing and moaning about how everything sucks. But let's really work hard tonight. Because one thing people love about our podcast is that we're not those miserable naysayers who hate everything. So I'm going to make sure we don't do that tonight. We are going to have cons because they are
you
there.
You can find those people on the Place to Be Nation, though.
No, none of them. A couple.
No,
of
no, you can find some. Trust me.
Yes, I know. But our goal tonight is to really work the pros because there are some good things about the WWE as a product. We have to sift through some of the muck, but there is some pros. There is. And yes, there are cons. And we'll do the same thing in segment two with the network. Because right now I think the network is awesome. But there are cons. Now, if we could find cons other than I want my AWA episodes, that would be great. We'll see. Nobody can say that. All right? Watch it, JD. We don't want to hear Roger Kent or Ron Trongard. That's your problem. So, all right.
I do have one. I do have one con right away. So I'll save it, but there is one that I have.
Okay. NXT uses too much yellow. No. Okay. Let's start with the pros. Benjamin, sure. Give me a pro of the product right now and expound on it. What is something you like about WWE right now?
Well, something I love about WWE right now is that, and I think we've talked about this numerous times, is that you're not going to find an era with more consistently good in-ring product. I think we complain a lot about the storylines, about the characters, about the format, stuff like that. But I know that I can tune in to Raw, to SmackDown, to NXT, anything, any week. And if I just want to watch a good wrestling match, I'll get at least two or three. And I think that speaks to the strength of the roster. I think it speaks to the strength of the developmental program. I just think bell to bell right now, I think they're better than they've been maybe ever. And that's even with some of the guys they've lost, even down Daniel Bryan, down CM Punk. A lot of the times I'll listen to the reaction shows and I don't get a lot of the negative response just because I'll just kind of lose myself in the matches and I don't get too deep into analyzing, you know, this guy was selling this wrong or, you know, there's too many rest holds here. Just from a layman's point of view, wrestling's fun to watch right now. And I think there are a lot of other pros to talk about too, but that's the one that jumps out at me at the beginning is they've got the horses. They've got, you know, the Cesaros, the Seth Rollins, the Dolph Ziggler's, guys who can consistently go, and that's just your top tier. I think even once you get into the guys who are mid-level workers, everyone's pretty good. And I think that is something you're always going to be able to build a product on.
Now, we're not talking about, oh my God, this guy's been used in a month, this storyline stinks. That's not... You're just talking about when you walk through the ropes and the bell rings, period.
Yeah. Okay. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wrestling's a bigger package. I want, you know, the good characters and the great interviews and all that. But if they're working on that, if they're spinning their wheels on that, if you're still going to give me a decent, you know, Ziggler-Cesaro match every week or Sheamus against Rollins or anything like that, you know, that buys you a lot of time and goodwill in my mind.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Rish?
For a pro, we're just saying a pro.
Well, no,
right now,
no,
right?
I mean it's more of we're expound on his thought
on the talent level,
yeah,
in the ring.
Yep. And then I'll get to your pro.
I've been saying that for months. Is that I think that the roster, even though it's not as fleshed out as it'll be in later years, that the roster is one of the most talented they've ever had. They have a level to which they have minor leagues that dish out great matches from week to week to week with really no hassle and without having to rely on the same guys every single time, which is really, really a great resource for WWE when you can have different guys like Cesaro and Bad News Barrett and I'm trying to think of a couple of other ones that have been like consistently delivering, guys like Cesaro and Dolph Ziggler. You can use all these guys, interchange them. You don't even have to give them much of a feud, and they'll deliver a 2 to 3 segment Raw match that will knock your socks off. And it's to the point where even NXT's pay-per-views on its own, in its own little bubble, are good enough that it could pretty much blow away anything you'll see, maybe even on WWE. So the talent level is just like Ben said, the talent level's excellent, you know, and the in-ring product is delivering. What I think I like about it even more is the energy. I think that the energy with the young guys that are coming in and the ones that are on the undercard, they have this want and this need to succeed. And I thought that they didn't have that in the WWE when they were pushing their young guys about a decade ago. And I think that you see that more and more with the young guys that are coming in from NXT. They really want to learn, and they're coming in like busting the door down.
Yeah. I think that listening to and reading some of the chats on Facebook when people talk about Raw the last couple weeks, I think people confuse one specific thing they liked with saying the show was very good. I talked to somebody the other night who thought, you know, Raw was not as bad as last week, and I said, you're comparing rotten meat to rotten eggs. It's kind of hard to say what sucks less. But I think a lot of people say, well, yeah, but this match was good. Yeah, this match was good. I thought the six-man tag Monday night was not terrible. I thought it was actually fairly entertaining. But you're talking about one piece of a three-hour puzzle. Saying, oh, yeah, the main event was really good, which means Raw was great. No, that's A and B, apples and oranges. To say this match is really good doesn't necessarily mean the show itself is good. Or you can say, wow, this was a great promo, but this match was terrible, so the show sucked. It's when you're thinking about it in a bubble, in a vacuum, then you have to identify the fact that the matches they put together, with a few errors here and there, Kane, are really good. What they're building around it is a different story, and we'll get to that, obviously, when we talk about cons. So, all right, Reesh, what's your pro? Do you have a pro of the product right now?
Well, it kind of tied into what I was saying to expound on what Ben was saying, is that the energy with the young guys and the commitment to the future, the fact that they had this entire special about the individual members of the Shield, and when you really think about it in the long term, the fact that they really did make sure that all three of those guys not only went over, but are now big-time superstars going into WrestleMania season, Bray Wyatt, we're probably going to be seeing the same thing with Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn and when they move on up, and Triple H is absolutely dead set on making the younger guys coming in and turning them into superstars in the next 2 or 3 years. And I think that's a great thing, because I think Triple H recognizes, even for an old fogey like him, that he's got to push new guys. It's mm-hmm. It's a must.
Right. Right. Steve, what's your pro?
My pro is the wide variety of guys that they have that could break out at any time. Cesaro, for example, was mentioned. You know, he's been kind of given a push and then a pull back down. But you watch him on Raw or even, you know, main event over the last year or two, and you never know when you're going to get a huge match out of him, where they're going to let him. And the one that comes to mind is the match he had with Cena, where that wasn't really advertised at all. It was just all of a sudden in the middle of the Raw, they let him go for like 20 minutes, and it was, you know, a TV match of the year candidate. And they have a lot of those guys on the roster, building up from what Ben had said. You know, they had a lot of these cuts a few months back. A guy like Drew McIntyre was cut. He's gone on to the Indies and having incredible matches. He's already like the Evolved champion. Mm-hmm. So they have the talent there. And at any time, if given the right direction and given the chance and the opportunity, they're going to have some great matches and some great character development. And another one I'll kind of point to is Goldust and Stardust.
Mm-hmm.
They've, you know, since they started tagging together with just the Rhodes brothers together, you could tell they're having the time of their life. Goldust seems about 5 to 10 years younger. And now that they've brought the Stardust character in too, it's like they're trying to outdo each other on a nightly basis. You can tell they're just having a blast, and that's contagious. They're one mm-hmm. of my favorite things on Raw right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree with that. And getting to, talking what Reesh was saying about the younger talent, I think NXT is definitely a pro for me as well. Now NXT is not technically it is the product.
Yeah, sure.
The roster itself is a little stagnant. I think they're slightly gun shy after what happened with Adam Rose, but that's a con. Adam Rose isn't the con. What they did to Adam Rose is the con, and I'll get to that in a minute. JD, what do you have for a pro?
I got two, and one I'll be brief with is, you know, everyone talking about the roster and the workers. I think they've really figured out, outside of a couple, instances, they've really figured out how to make tag team wrestling entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a tag match, it's going to be really good, whether it's an actual tag team or two guys teaming together randomly. That's a simple one. But I tried to think of something, since everyone's kind of talking about the roster, tried to think of something outside of that. And, you know, going way back to the Russo era, the Attitude era, I felt like in 1999 I was like a lone voice crying out because I hated the product so much and it was so on fire. And the thing I hated the most was it seemed like from week to week they had no idea what they were going to do. And now, whether you like where they're going or not, I like that they have long-term plans. You know, when WrestleMania ended, we started hearing that Brock was going to win the title at SummerSlam 2 weeks later. You know, we've been hearing since Brock won the title that Roman Reigns, or they've got one of two plans, but they've got their long-term plans written out. And I think that's a big deal. You know, the cons that we'll get into, maybe the smaller details of the plans and stuff like that. But I think that shows that they're actually looking towards the future a little bit, and they're looking at building guys up and things like that. Whether or not we like who they're putting in those positions is one thing or not, but I'm just happy to have a company that says, hey, let's look 6 months down the road at what we're going to be doing. So,
you know, it's funny, JD, it's funny you brought up 99 specifically, because one of the things I was thinking as everyone else was talking is that going back and watching some of those 99 shows now, just Raws and stuff like that, and this has been the last couple of years, even before the network when they were on 24/7, which I loved at the time, you know, when I was watching with my buddies and stuff. I just can't get into them now.
Yeah.
Right. I can't. Well, let me put it this way. I can watch an episode of Raw now and not be doing anything, because I'll just sit there and, like, you know, I'll have a snack or I'll do something and watch a 20-minute match. I can't sit there and not be on my computer or doing something else watching the 99 Raws, because no match goes longer than 2 minutes. And
right.
It's just so bang, 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 which was great. It was fine at the time. But it's funny how, as much as people complain about, you know, the product now and the Attitude Era was this golden age, it really is. It just depends what kind of mindset you're in, because a lot of things about today's product and how good a lot of the pros were bringing up now make it hard for me to go back and watch the supposed quote-unquote good shows, and I'm just picking them apart. I'm like, oh man, I need to go back. I need to go back to 2013, to the golden days.
Well, just to compare and contrast, you know, think of 99. What I think of 99 WWE, or WWF, I guess it would be then, the greater power, and that was a storyline that they put so much time into, but they put no thought into. They had no idea who it was going to be, and of course, we ended up being Vince. If they do a big, major storyline now, when they kick it off, I believe that they have the ending in mind.
That's a really great point.
Yeah, so I mean, you can have a little bit of faith in the product, because you at least they know where they're going. Whether we like where they're going or not is a totally different issue, but they know where they're going.
Yeah, I don't think
the big stuff, with the big stories.
I don't think the company's as obsessed with sensationalism as they were in the late 90s when they were
nobody is anymore.
Yeah, and that's why building a long-term plan is not the worst idea, as long as you keep the fans in tune to what the payoff is. That's where you can get into dangerous territory.
Right. You know, today on the stream, because I don't say I consistently watch the stream at work. I'll usually put a pay-per-view on in the background when I'm working at my desk. By the way, Ben, WrestleWar 92, awesome. I almost think WrestleWar 92 is almost better than Super Brawl 2.
I still think that main event is the greatest WCW match ever.
Well, you do realize, I didn't notice this, on a side note, we'll get back to this in a second, I just needed to say this. That War Games match was the last five-star match, WCW match that Meltzer ever gave five stars to.
Yeah, I'm so jealous of you, Scott, because it's like you and I started on the WCW NWA rewatch around the same place, but because you watch it at work, you get so far ahead of me, and then I like struggle to catch up, because I'm in like 1990 now, and you'll every day on Facebook let me know like these great matches that at first it was just like, oh, all right, cool, well, that's like two clashes away, and now it just gets further and further. And it's like, stop.
Ben's stuck with Black Blood, you know?
Oh, God. There's only one Black Blood. Yeah. No, he's stuck with Oz right now, or was Oz 91? Yeah. Well,
no,
I'm into Vinny. He was actually, not to continue going off the path, but he was a better wrestler as Vinny Vegas than he was as Oz. I'll say that. But WrestleWar 92 has the best three-match stretch in a row I think I've ever seen in their history. You have, I'll tell you something, Pillman and Tom Zenk for the light heavyweight title.
Great
is a really good match.
Yeah, and the then Steiners have, and the Steiners versus Hiroshi Hayes and
no, it's Fujinami and
oh, it's Fujinami. Okay,
it's Fujinami and I can't remember the other guy's name.
I think it's Hiroshi Hayes.
No, it's not Hayes. It's Iyashi E something or other. Anyway, it was like 20 minutes.
Is Hiroshi
awesome.
Hayes related to Michael Hayes?
They might have done the same opium.
You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the Japan Super Show when the Steiners wrestled Hayes Sasaki.
It's Fujinami. And I can't think of the guy's name, but that match was incredible.
Takayuki Iizuka.
Yes, that guy.
Oh
he wore
God.
Pink. I remember him wearing pink. And then the War Games match.
I can watch early Steiners all day long. That was the only thing about WCW I remember from when I was a kid.
The Steiners had a match with those guys in Japan, and I think that one was Hiroshi Hase, and the Steiners just destroyed Iizuka.
Jesse kept harping that they gave him a black eye and his nose was bleeding, and
maybe that is the match I'm thinking of.
Watts was building the Steiners as world beaters so that they could wrestle the Dr. Death and Terry Gordy.
But that guy specifically took a pounding.
Up on I don't know if it's Beach Blast or if it's
Beach Blast. Yeah. That's the last match on Beach Blast.
I know there's a lot of cool tag team names, but there's not many cooler than the Miracle Violence Connection.
No, there's not.
They're the greatest name ever. All right, sorry. Back to
there is one. It's called the Ding Dongs.
No, I passed them, thank God. They were never on pay-per-view. That was a clash, thank God.
That's right. They were a clash.
While you guys were talking about that, I was just thinking about the Cookie Monster and John Oliver video that was going around today.
See, there you go. Bringing up the Muppets again. No, no, I'm like it. All right, we'll talk WCW another day. That's a good topic to talk about, actually. All right. How about this for a pro? Merchandise. I feel like, now, as everybody knows, and as our very good friend Brad Woodley knows, I'm a DVD junkie. I collect everything. I've got myriads. I'm up to No Way Out 2012, and that includes, you know, compilations and stuff. But for years, and let's be honest, guys, for years, WWE never put their DVDs on sale. Never. They used to do that, you know, $5 if you sign up, and then, you know, it's still $9 shipping or whatever the hell it is. But I feel like since, like, November, they've done a pretty decent job of firing off some good sales.
Yeah, they just had that. I think it was a $9.99 for their Blu-rays.
Yep, for select Blu-rays, they had I won't get one half off. And they actually now have a T-shirt that says $9.99 on it, which I think is pretty funny.
Well, that's the one thing I'll say: the creativity of their T-shirt designs has definitely taken a leap over the last year.
My favorite, I haven't bought it, but my favorite. I think I'm going to get it. Is the Cesaro King of Swing that's like the King of the Ring logo?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Because I remember back in the.
Go ahead.
I remember back in the day, like, they had Austin 316. The next shirt they had was Austin as the Terminator, you know, and it had something on the back of it. But that was the only. If you wanted a Steve Austin shirt, really, there was only about like three or four you could buy. You could buy like 7 or 10 Dolph Ziggler shirts.
Yeah,
you know, in all different varieties.
Yeah,
mind you,
over time, they made like 40 Stone Cold T-shirts. I think.
Oh yeah, as time went by,
The most memorable Stone Cold T-shirts was probably Blood from a Stone. The one where his arms turned to snakes, that was always a pretty popular one. Mm-hmm. And during the invasion, he had the awesome one where he had the like looked like the Jack Daniels label. I always thought it was a long sleeve T-shirt. I always thought that one was pretty cool. But I feel like that they're putting their T-shirts on sale. Another thing they never do. So what are your thoughts on that, Ben?
They need to put them on sale. They're so expensive to begin with.
I know they are. They're $25. They are pretty expensive. By the way, I can finally admit I look at the picture all the time. It's on my phone. As much as I had a great time that night with Dr. G and Armento and D'Amato, I don't know why the hell I spent money on that Evolution T-shirt. That is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I don't know why the hell I bought that shirt. I just wish they redid the Laid, Paid, Made. I would have bought that. They shouldn't even bother making new ones.
So you're saying you perished? You didn't adapt?
I wish that T-shirt perished. I don't know if I'll ever wear it again.
I think Steve will admit that was a big step for you to admit that.
Yes, and it was a very big step.
Thank you.
And I was at an Arcade Fire concert last week, and the concert T-shirts there were $40. So
Concert T-shirts are ridiculous. I was at I saw Paul McCartney a couple years ago at Yankee Stadium.
Good night, everybody.
They had a leather jacket, or it was like a varsity jacket, you know, like the Steiners. It was like the felt and then the leather sleeves. $320. Absolutely ridiculous. And then all the Billy Joel concerts I've seen lately. Yeah,
The sad thing is whoever spends $300 on a leather Paul McCartney varsity jacket probably thinks they're looking really cool.
Yeah.
And they're not at all.
Yes. It's like the hat in Caddyshack. I bet you buy this, you get a free bowl of soup. But yeah, I think merchandising – I have to say that they're not doing too bad in that department.
I think, Scott, you're tapping into a bigger thing. And I think that's that I hesitate to say corporate because I think it has bad connotations. Right. But I just think in terms of being a company, like, you know, a lot of complaints go around to the fact that it's not wrestling anymore. It's a business. But as a multi-billion-dollar business, every branch of their operation is so great. Back in the day, the stuff you're talking about was basically like – you know, whoever had spare time designed the t-shirts, now they got a whole division of creative people, and they're getting the best people right out of school. You know, they're getting their agreement with Full Sail. We don't hear about it a lot, but I feel like that's yielding a lot of, you know, great people to work on their TV, to work on other stuff. It's the packaging of everything that they do. It's when you go to something like Access and you look at how smoothly it's run and imagine, you know, that 20 years ago or even 15 years ago. And I think that carries over to the merchandise, both in the creativity of the design, but also, you know, the sales of it. They have actual smart, talented people, corporate people, who are running all their divisions, whether it's TV, whether it's merchandising, whether it's live events. You know, not to harp on old wrestlers, but it's not just old wrestlers who are retired anymore. You know, those guys have their key positions as agents and as creative or whatever else. But, you know, they brought people in who are the best at what they do in various walks of life, and they're making WWE better on the whole. The only place that hurts them sometimes is the writing staff. But even, you know, those guys are more often than not, there's some pretty talented people there too. But I think the points you're making are dead on. And I think it talks about just how, you know, you want to buy a t-shirt, you want to go to an event, you want to buy a DVD. It's going to be expertly produced. It's not, this right. is not the slipshod, you know, 90s production that we once
no,
had.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yeah. I've heard nothing but, and this includes you, Reesh, I've heard nothing but awesome things about this Paul Heyman DVD. I've heard it's been fantastic.
It's the best documentary by
yeah,
far.
I'm looking forward to it.
I've never seen a DVD with almost no wrestling. That's
I have a feeling,
my favorite wrestling DVD.
I have a feeling right now, I think at the moment, yes, I think from what it seems like, the Paul Heyman DVD is very good. In terms of the documentary, I have a feeling, though, even though he won't be there to speak for himself, that Savage documentary is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Even though he's not there, and that's going to be a bummer, but I agree with you, Rich.
But to speak to what Ben was saying, you know, the hardest thing for, I guess we could say in terms of all around, like, the pop culture, that WWE is a niche company, you'd say, right? A niche corporation?
Mm-hmm.
You'd say that? Okay.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The hardest thing for a niche company to do is to expand its entire like presence without saturating everything else. And I think that the fact that they have so many smart guys in the room for each of these departments, like he was saying, to expand it without losing their touch is very, very difficult, but they found a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just such a shame, and we get to the cons later about it, that it hasn't shown on the creative side when it comes to the actual television product, right. The most vital part of the company.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I just realized that I did pay half price for the Evolution t-shirt because I also bought Hulk Rules t-shirt for full price. I feel better about that at least. I only spent like $13 on that Evolution t-shirt.
Is that Hulk Rules or Hulk's Rules?
No, Hulk, the old school one.
Ah,
not the one with the rules on the back. The one that – because that's Hulk, the first t-shirt
Hulk
I ever
Hogan
bought.
Or Hulk Hogan?
It's either Hulk Hogan, Hulk Hogan, God rest his soul, Ultimate Warrior, or Hulk Hogan, whatever that is. All
right. Bargaining. That was bargaining right there, Ben.
Now let me ask you this. Let me
I was just going to say that. I was like, he accepted it. Now he's moving on to trying to justify.
He's moving backwards through the
season. He's trying to. He's going to spend the whole podcast trying to convince himself we're that buying that Evolution t-shirt was the best thing ever.
Greatest thing ever. No, it was a terrible
Scott,
Evolution.
You're going to be at denial by the end of segment two. That's where you were supposed to start.
And that's I didn't buy the Evolution t-shirt.
Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't my money. No, I'm only kidding. But I did. It is a hideous looking t-shirt. All right.
We'll end the show with Scott setting his shirt on fire and pure.
But like Sergeant Slaughter before WrestleMania 7, I'll put it on a pole and
puke.
Damn you, Bautista. All right, Willie. I want to ask you this because you've been to a lot of Chikara shows. In terms of marketing, do you think that that some of these smaller companies can try and model merchandise wise what WWE does? Because I feel like that's the way they're going to get the word out is if you see these t-shirts, like see their t-shirts. Another example, you know that site Barbershop Window that has those really awesome like kind of like kind of wink
Love
like you know tongue-in-cheek
window.
T-shirts?
Yeah.
They're the official t-shirt. They're the official merchandise site for New Japan.
Yeah, the 1 hour.
Which I think is pretty damn awesome. I've always wanted a New Japan t-shirt. You know, the king of the little lion. I always wanted one of those t-shirts. Anyway, Steve, like I said, you've been to a few Chikara shows. Do you feel that that marketing is a huge key for these smaller promotions, that they can follow WWE's example of getting the t-shirts out, and that kind of helps them get the word out?
Well, not just their shirts, sometimes their shows. And I have gone the last 2 years, especially since I've become more involved with Place to Be Nation, that I've gone to a lot more shows mm-hmm. than I used to. And so I've seen some of the, not just the merchandising, but the way the shows themselves are sold. And that's the one thing about the WWE that I think they've done really well in the last couple of years, is you're seeing them back in the malls again. You're seeing the shirts at Hot Topic for the last year or two. We haven't seen that since the days of the Attitude Era. And I think that the WWE is taking a little bit more of taking a little bit from the smaller companies and some of the more like independent clothes making companies that do like these retro shirts and stuff like that. Hence, you see, this is our King of Swing shirt. Some of the vintage like Big Boss Man shirts and Akeem shirts that they had put out recently. Things that they've, you know, kind of borrowed from Chikara and Barbershop Window and / 1 Hour Tees and all that. I think they can learn off of each other what works and what doesn't. And I wish some of these independent companies would work more with each other instead of against each other when they're such a small, you know, we're talking about WWE being a niche compared to the mainstream of pop culture. Well, these independent companies are just like, you know, kind of like off-Broadway shows or, you know, little local theater companies. You have a really small audience you're catering to. And if you're trying to say, you know, put the other one down and to put yourself up, you're going to lose a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. I will say this, though, about the merchandise. That's a con, and then we'll get into your guys' cons. How much at cost could a belt be? I mean, seriously, how much is that cheap leather and some metal plates? $100? Maybe? 125?
I remember at WrestleMania 25, someone told me they bought the Rated R belt for over $200.
That's actually not bad.
That's a cheap price.
That's a cheap price. I take that.
My son has asked for a replica
belt. Now, this was 2009, mind you.
Yeah, for 2 years now, and there is no way I'm going to spend the money. They're like $400.
The new belt. Yeah. I like the new belt. I think the new belt's very, very snazzy. $420.
Jordan, I'll make your son a belt for $150.
Yeah, right?
Dave Milliken will make you a belt for $1,500.
Yeah.
So
they have I don't know if Ring of Honor still does this, but they were selling I wouldn't call them replicas because the replicas are a little, you know, they're not the same thing, but they would sell the actual belts.
Yeah, I was goofing the last time Justin and I on our show had Kevin Kelly on. I said I wanted I like the Ring of Honor World Title belt. I think it's pretty cool.
But I think
it's also $1,800 or $3,600 or something.
Yeah, yeah. Price. And the lesser titles were like 12 to 14 or something.
Yeah,
like
they're actually like the actual belts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Steve tapped into something that's true, is that one thing that the WWE did that was really smart is that they embraced their retro. They didn't run away from it, because the way they were doing it all the way until like 2006, 2007, 2008 was we need to do something new, new design, new skew to new younger people. We need new. Now they've realized we need to go back to the future to get people to tap into our archives so that we can suck them back in.
I agree.
And it's not even going back to the future. They don't have to be ashamed of their past anymore.
Yeah.
Well, and for a long time, that's what they were. If you saw a legend come out, he was going to be portrayed as an imbecile or he was going to be embarrassed. And now that's not the case anymore.
No, not at all. That's a good point, JD. All right, JD, give me a con.
A con?
Yeah, only one, because we got four people here and they're going to use all the same con probably. So, what's a con of the product right now?
This is probably my biggest pet peeve. When they quote unquote, don't have anything for a guy, or I'll use Cesaro as an example. You know, they're kind of in a holding pattern with a guy and they don't have anything for him. So they'll just have him lose 8 weeks in a row. That frustrates me to no end.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Because to speak to a bigger con, I don't buy the crap line where people say wins and losses don't matter, because they do. Why do you think Rusev is over? Because he wins all the time. If he lost more than he won, nobody would give a crap about the guy.
Yep.
Wins and losses do actually matter to fans. You know, Ryback was was starting to become a huge name when he won all the time. Now he doesn't. Nobody cares about him anymore.
Well, that heel turn the night after 29 was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, sure. But he'd already been losing before that, and he'd lost steam, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess that would be my bigger thing, is this idea. And us as fans, we're the ones who perpetuate it. We say wins and losses don't matter. Not to them, but we're kind of proof that it does to us, you know?
Right.
The guys that win are the guys that get over. Plain and simple.
Mm. Willie, what do you think of that?
For what Jordan says, yeah, I think that's the in terms of the creative part, that's where, you know, they've always struggled, that they build from the main event and then they try to figure out last minute what to do with the rest of the guys to fit together the television show. Right. And that's a bigger problem when you have, you know, 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, main event and superstars mm-hmm. to fill, plus your couple house mm-hmm. shows and, you know, a pay-per-view once a month or a special event. I'm sorry. One of the cons that I was just thinking about, I probably watch NXT now more than I watch Raw, just because it's a tighter show, you know, less time that I have to put in. And the one thing I've noticed, and you can notice on the main product too, is how everybody looks the same. And what I mean by that is, you know, kind of their move sets, their, you know, that's the one negative about developmental is they'll take these guys, you know, from the NFL, from bodybuilding, and then from the indies, and they forget why they hired them, you know, why they, you know, and that's what worries me about a guy like Kevin Steen coming in who has a distinct style, that they're going to change him to fit the same punch, kick mode that everyone else does. So what you see on NXT, the guys who are not your big top few guys like Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn, etc., they're interchangeable. The only thing that's different about them is what their body type, skin color, hair color, muscle definition is. Everything else about them in terms of their movement is the same. And then some of the glaring exceptions is a guy like Kalisto. And the guy I point to the most with this on the main roster is Roman Reigns. How I feel like they're, after the face turn, after Shield split up, they're kind of scenifying him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He has, you know, a lot less moves, 3 or 4 big ones that he's doing. And they're,
he does do it and can't, and, putting, and struggling to put them together.
It's a right. square peg in a round hole.
Mm. If you like track Cena's progression too, like the Blue Thunder Bomb that Sami Zayn does, you know, so well now. Well, Cena used to do it like that too. And I think it was the 6-man that we just saw on Raw. He just kind of picks up the guy and drops him now. He doesn't like spin him around in a circle and sit out and do the power bomb. He just kind of picks him up and drops him down. Mm-hmm. And like that's what I mean by like the scenification. Like you just, you know, kind of everyone moves the same.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Moves. I kind of agree with that. I kind of agree with that. Reesh, do you have a con?
Well, I have a big one, but I've already aired my grievances, and I'm going to take the high road and skip it. But
that would be a pro for me, actually.
And that's why you were introduced last. That's all I'm saying. But no, Steve said the point, and I said the same word in one of the pros, and that's interchangeable. Because when I said it as a pro, I meant that you can have all these performers, and you can just kind of tally them all out there and put them in different matches and different combinations, and you can just have great matches. Jordan made a great point months ago, is that they are able – WWE's done the impossible. They're able to have a good to great show, and nobody even cares. The problem is that they have so much oversaturation with their product, with – Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, Superstars, NXT, and all this stuff, is that they have spread it out so far thin that all the shows are the same. The pay-per-views are the same. Nothing sticks out, not even the special events. And it has nothing to do with the fact that they're not pay-per-views anymore. It has to do with the fact that the characters are all on the same level. Nobody gets pushes, and the storylines just go in the same circle over and over again. And we have these shows where nothing really stands out. You know, the only thing that stood out was Brock Lesnar destroying John Cena at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, what stood out in WWE storylines in the last 5 or 6 months after WrestleMania? Really nothing. And that's a bad thing. You know, and can you blame creative for that? Sure. It's probably part of their problem. But you can also kind of blame the talent in a ways for not trying to force the issue and not trying to latch on to the crowd more. You know, it's a double standard there. You can't just say, well, the talent's being held back and the creative's doing everything wrong. There's a little give and go in there, you know, and that's been my main problem with that. All the shows are interchangeable because nobody stands out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say to speak to your point, Andrew, I think Dean Ambrose stands out too, and I think that proves your point, though. You know, because he's one of the few guys that does.
Well, he's also the exception to Steve's rule. He's proven the point is that when
right.
Steve's talking about all these guys being brought in, you know, a Kevin Steen, the danger of him losing his edge, Ambrose, and I would say actually Rollins to maybe a lesser degree, but also like they're the two guys who have kept their indie edge. Like they still wrestle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Dean Ambrose isn't doing like Jon Moxley blood matches and Seth Rollins isn't doing 60-minute Ring of Honor Tyler Black matches, but they're still doing the things that caused WWE to hire them. Mm-hmm. They haven't been generified.
Right. Well, that's what I meant kind of with Ambrose is Andrew said kind of, you know, they're interchangeable, the same thing.
Yeah.
With Ambrose, it's at least like a baby face that doesn't act like John Cena.
Yep.
You know, and that's why he stands out.
But let's be honest here. Until we get to WrestleMania and they're able to build this to something more of a crescendo, is Roman Reigns in a position right now that you could have interchanged with three or four other guys that are in the mid-card right now? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few people you could have pushed. Sure. And that's a bad thing. That means you don't have a pecking order. You don't have a guy who's way over, a guy behind him who could catch up to him. You don't really have that. You know, the problem is that, you know, it's a seesaw. You know, you have one thing go high, but something's got to go low. And the problem is you have an elite level of main event guys, but there's really not that many. You've got this super bloated mid-card. And that's a good thing if you want great matches on Raw in the second and first hour of your show. But is it good in long term when you're trying to get to WrestleMania and you're trying to make these guys seem like a big deal? No, that's bad.
Well, let's take a look for a sec at the hottest periods in company history. And what was going on with the main event, but also the guys they were prepping to be the next main event. You look at Rock and Wrestling, Hogan's on top, but Savage, IC level guy, but you knew he was going somewhere. After him, Warrior's holding the IC title. You knew he was going to be the next in line. As they moved on, guys like Brett, Shawn, they came from the mid-card.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the Attitude Era, you know, when Austin was running like crazy on top, you had Rock and Triple H feuding underneath so that within 6 months to a year, they could be the WWF title guys.
Mm-hmm.
Flash forward to today, you've got the main eventers. You've got the guys like Roman Reigns, who they jump straight to the main event. And then if you're contending for an Intercontinental or a US title, that means you're not going anywhere. You're stuck in quicksand.
That's exactly true. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not prepping the next main eventers right now. They're not testing out the main. I think I've seen this argument everywhere is that why isn't Roman Reigns the Intercontinental champion to give him kind of a testing ground? It's because if they're going to make someone big, they bring him up, they put him in a main event feud right away, and then they either sink or swim. They're either going to be stay as a main eventer or they're going to, you know, get dropped back down. Look at someone like, Drew McIntyre, who got let go, who was pushed as, he was the IC champion, but he was also Vince McMahon's chosen one right off the bat. And when he didn't succeed, then they said, all right, no faith in this guy. We'll keep him around for a couple more years, then we'll cut him.
Right. Now,
you know, to speak to that, Dolph Ziggler's been in the IC title picture for 4 years.
Right.
Now. Years.
Yeah. And it's hard to sink or swim when everybody's sharing the same pool.
Yeah, and think about it. Bret Hart went from being a tag team champion to an intercontinental champion to a WWF champion within 2 years, but he did his time in every division.
Yep. And the other piggybacking that, Ben, is that they don't know how to react to injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Dolph Ziggler got a – I mean, I wasn't there that night. Most of us were there at MetLife the night before, but that pop when he beats Del Rio at Izod – might be one of the hottest, one of the biggest pops in the history of Raw.
It went over big.
Yeah.
Just because Dolph Ziggler kicked, just because that sloppy bastard Jack Swagger kicked him in the head, is push right down the stinker. He didn't get a second chance. That's their problem. They can't seem to be like, all right, well, he got hurt, now he's going to come back, and he gets his title back. And they didn't do that. It's like, oh, he must be injury prone. Why? Because some sloppy buffoon kicked him in the head.
It's a very ADD approach.
Exactly.
It is a very ADD approach. They have the attention span of 11-year-olds.
They're not giving up on Dolph Ziggler. They just gave up on Dolph Ziggler 5 minutes ago.
Right, but can you imagine 1997, Steve Austin breaks his neck, and they decide, well, he's injury prone. We're not going to go with
him. Precisely. What happened 15 years ago? Why can't they think that way now? Or, God, Jesus, 17 years ago.
Yeah, or, hey, man, Triple H tears his quad. Oh, well, he's not going to get a push when he comes back. Like,
you know?
Just look.
Well,
look,
yeah,
I'm just the way I started this, you know, look at your hottest periods. What were you doing different then?
Yeah. And the one thing that angers me about it is that you have this period where you have a part-time WWE World Champion.
We're going to get to that.
You've got a void to fill. You've got a mid-card that's full of great guys. You need to build a system of who you want to be your guy that challenges Brock and maybe the guy that challenges him that might not win but can carry a pay-per-view that's secondary to WrestleMania. You've got to figure out a game plan. You know, right. Jordan talks about they have a master plan. They have a great plan. They've got to flesh it out.
Right.
Before we move on, can I ask you guys a quick question, Scott?
Well, hold it, Ben.
Oh, okay.
Hold it. Let's take a break so we can fill it out the other end. But, guys, awesome job so far. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion because I got a couple cons that I want to throw at you guys. And then we'll talk about – then we'll continue the game, but we'll switch from the product to the network.
Oh, yeah.
This is Episode 17, Place to Be Nation's main event. The guys are fired up. We'll continue after this.
Because?
Somebody remembered.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show. Each and every week, we'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's main event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's main event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to episode 17 of Place to Be Nation's main event. It's been a great first half, and we're going to keep fired up. I am Scott Criscolo with the Core Four, Ben Morris, Andrew Reich, Jordan Duncan, Steve Willey. As you heard, PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture, including, of course, guys, the PTBN's World Cup of TV characters.
Oh, I feel like Andrew after a wrestling discussion.
This is longer than the actual World Cup.
But it's tremendous. And today, as we're recording... we got some matchups, and I want to say something. Ben, No one, and maybe you and I, you know how the guys are doing that awesome Seinfeld rewatch?
Oh, yeah?
Maybe you and I should do a 90210 rewatch.
Oh, my wife would be in on that.
Scott, I'm more of a Melrose Place man.
Ugh. Are they making an unauthorized movie still about either of those shows?
What? Are they what?
Are they making an unauthorized movie about either of those shows?
Dustin Diamond plays Jason Priestley.
I just started watching Saved by the Bell before we
turned it off
first half hour.
No,
I'm loving
off.
It so far.
Let's get it out the way. Unauthorized Saved by the Bell movie on Lifetime is fucking awful.
Don't watch it right now.
You know, Ben, I went in thinking it'd be a guilty pleasure, and I just felt guilty.
Just feel guilty.
You know what's better? You want to know something? You know what's better? I'm going to kind of look outside the box here. The better unauthorized of a show being made, An Adventure in Space and Time, which was a TV movie on BBC about the making of the first Doctor Who. That is awesome. Not this Dustin Diamond wet dream nonsense. Anyway, getting back to what I was saying. The World Cup of TV characters. You had that big Brandon Walsh push, and he stunned Sam Malone.
Ridiculous.
That's bullshit.
But right now, Brandon is getting pummeled by maybe my favorite guy ever, Thomas Sullivan Magnum. 47-20. So for all you Brandon Walsh fans, you better go vote or he's toast. Let's see. Also,
Sean Woods means to be a man.
Yes.
I blame the mustache.
Dwight Schrute is beating B.A. Baracus by 14 votes.
Meh.
Which one is B.A. Baracus?
It's Mr. T.
It's B.A. Baracus. It's the German guy that hung out with the Hearts. B.A.
It's kind of like B.A. Star.
I like you said that, Rich. B.A. Baracus. hanging out with Brett Owen.
He's on Hogan's Heroes, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's Curtis Clink.
I was totally teasing.
Hogan's Heroes. It's Brian.
Now we're talking about the shows that Scott used to watch.
A Colonel Clink character in Chikara. That would be awesome. Guy with a helmet and a pith helmet and a thing on the top. All right. And Kermit the Frog's beating Elaine Bennis, which I'm sure does not make Justin Rosero happy.
Which one dances, though?
Kermit the Frog should be beating Elaine Bennis.
Absolutely.
It's close, though. It's only 4 votes. 30.
But no, the bigger question is which one's the better dancer?
Jim Henson could shake his. Never mind.
And if you and I
I'm
got
a little
get
bummed.
On that,
I am a little bummed that Uncle Jesse Katsopoulos is getting crushed by Cliff Huxtable.
Well,
I thought that would be closer.
No, that was he got a bad draw. Uncle Jesse got a bad draw.
The matchup of like the World Heavyweight Championship, like Ric Flair, Harley Race, Starrcade 83 matchup, is still, still in the running, is between Tony Soprano and Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I'd like to point out that I believe Cliff Huxtable's name is spelled wrong. It's Huxtable with an A. You just got schmucked!
Yeah! Wouldn't that be great if... Okay. The score right now is Tony Soprano's 54 and Uncle Phil 27.
How's Scott, I need to ask your
Gene
opinion.
How's Gene Kaniski doing as ref?
With what?
How's Gene Kaniski doing as the ref?
Just as awful as he did in the...
Scott, very quick, I just need your opinion. Tony, because it just came up again with David Chase. Mm-hmm. Tony Soprano, dead or alive?
Oh, he's alive.
Okay.
He's alive. I think Meadow's dead.
Unfortunately, James Avery is... What's his name, Phil? Is his name James Avery?
Yeah, he's dead.
Rest in peace, James Avery.
And Tim Taylor's giving Barney Fife a stern whipping right now as well. So anyway, continue voting on Place to Be Nation's World Cup of TV Characters, the endless tournament. But
vote Kermit, vote often.
Vote Kermit, vote often. But I would like to do a Beverly Hills 90210 watch. I think that'd be pretty awesome. All right,
I'd do that.
Okay, we were talking about the pros and cons of the WWE product. We are going to do the network. I know we've kind of teased it for a couple weeks, but we are going to talk about it. I want to get into my two cons and then we'll expound on it. All right, con number one. All right, I kind of took this away from Reach because I don't want him getting stoned, but let's talk about Brock Lesnar for a minute. As a pro and a con, he might be both. Now, we found out today that the new financial situation involving WWE and Brock Lesnar is that they can have him come out whenever they want. It's like a per diem deal. Now, everyone thinks, oh, this is great. Now he'll be on all the time, and then little poor Rich cries in the corner. But the ball is still in WWE's court. It was in their court the first time before we knew this. It's still in their court. Just because they now have the flexibility doesn't mean they're going to use the flexibility. It's the ball is still in their court. So before we all say, all right, Brock's gonna be on every week. Let's just see. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Now, having said that, is Brock being on these last 2 weeks of Raw would have been well, he was 2 weeks ago, right? Because he got his belt. Mm-hmm. Would him have been on Monday made that show any better? No. It wouldn't matter. The show still was bad. So I don't want to burst your bubble, Reesh, because I still do partially agree with you that I would like a champion every week. I'm not going to stop watching or anything. My point is, would him being on really make these shows any better? No. The show still sucks. The creative is abysmal. Number two, we could get into Brock and take up the whole rest of the show, so I don't want to totally harp on Brock. I want to get into this part, this con. This is one of my cons, and then I want to expound on that, on this discussion. Here's the problem. When you look at the core WWE universe right now, everybody, not just the 12-year-old girls who love Cena and still wear his glow-in-the-dark shirts. I'm talking about everybody, and that includes us and everybody else. There is really, legitimately, only two people on this planet that anybody really, really, really cares about. And neither of them are active right now. One is CM Punk, and one is Daniel Bryan. That's it. No one gives a damn about Kane. That's we all know that for a fact. And as great, as good as a wrestler, and I do break his stones a lot, as good really a wrestler as Randy Orton is. I don't think Randy Orton's a terrible wrestler. He needs a vacation.
He doesn't move the needle.
He needs a vacation. John Cena is just broken down. And this is another topic for another main event. Did the WWE ruin him? Did they go to the well so often with him that his body is just goo now? The guy's been walking around with busted shoulders and busted knees since like 2008. So have they ruined him because they have no faith in anybody else? But now nobody even cares. I literally sat on on this couch Monday night and laughed out loud when he said, "I'm going to sue you." Now, if this was 1999, Steve Austin would have just punched Triple H in the face.
What's that? I almost Oh, go ahead, JD.
I said, JD. Especially since he's the baby face and they have him say that.
I know. That sounds like stupid.
I felt like your Golden God called an audible in the promo when he said he basically called Cena out on his script and said, "That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard."
I know, pretty much.
Because it really did make no sense.
It really made no sense
to do that. I felt like he was calling out the writer. He was calling him out the carpet.
Yeah,
for
that was terrible.
Said.
Right.
Yeah.
So Seth Rollins, not ready yet. Let me differentiate this. Roman Reigns not being ready and Seth Rollins not being ready are two different not being readies. Seth Rollins isn't ready because his moment to hit the needle hasn't happened yet. But he's been fantastic in the ring. But here's a merchandising thing that I want to harp on too. They were in Iowa. Now, when you're in a hometown of a guy, face or heel, the crowd loves him. He got face pops Monday night in Des Moines. And then somebody I heard somebody that was on, I think it was Lord's Pain or one of those other sites, said that not one concession stand or not one merchandise stand had his T-shirts. I mean, really?
Wow.
Is anybody that dumb? But that's another issue that I'm not going to get into. The problem right now is there is not one top-level guy in that company anybody cares about. They want Daniel Bryan back. They want CM Punk signed. Do it. That's it. Just do it. We'll bide our time and bide our time through the end of the fall and into the Rumble. But when all of us, when Place to Be Nation is at the Wells Fargo Arena in Philly in January, I don't care how cold it is, everybody wants to hear Cult of Personality, period. Is that going to happen? Probably 70-30 no.
Scott, I thought you were going to say Copacabana. I really did.
What?
At the Copa.
Who's going to come out? Disco Inferno?
The Colt Cabana's old song. Yeah.
Colt.
Colt Cabana used to come out to that.
Boom, boom, baby.
So that's the problem. Your thoughts on that? Legitimately, when it comes to this, I'll start with you, Steve. When it comes to this crowd, this fan base, the only two guys really, truly anybody cares about is Punk and Daniel Bryan. That's it.
Yeah. Yes and no. Yes, they're the top two guys in terms of fan
love.
In terms of fan favorites, fan love, because you get all members of the audience with those two guys. Mm-hmm. What's so great about Daniel Bryan is that he is relatable to guys like us who've grown up with the product, to little kids who see him as an underdog and probably see themselves in him. Like, you know, he's the little guy who's getting bullied around, but he's taking on the authority all by himself pretty much. And that's the story of a lot of kids who watch the product, that they are, you know, kids who are bullied, maybe, you know, a little nerdy, stuff like that. Or maybe I'm talking about myself. But anyway, you know, they're so relatable. And CM Punk's the anti-hero.
Yeah. And Steve, sorry, before you move off Daniel Bryan, because I don't want to let you finish, but I know if I don't say it, no one else will. Let's call a spade too. The female demographic likes Daniel Bryan because he's on Total Divas and he's great on Total Divas.
Yeah.
It's legit. He is my wife's favorite person on Total Divas, and pretty much every girl I know who watches that show, they love him because he's the sweet, funny guy.
Right, and that is him. That is him. Like Jordan mentioned, I just listened to him today on the SummerSlam 2010 podcast about how he got to meet him at Chikara during his time where he was fired. And I got to do the same at when he was in Dragon Gate in Wisconsin, in Illinois. And just a really cool, down-to-earth guy who stayed after the show and shook hands with every single person
there. I was going to say the exact same thing. Biggest star there, stayed longer than everybody.
Yeah. He was busted open. That was a show he was against Moxley. He was busted open, rat-taped his head, went out and shook everyone's hand, posed for pictures, autographs for free.
Yeah. And the guy I shook hands with in Houston, Texas in 2009 when he was still at Ring of Honor is the same exact guy that you see on the E! Network.
Absolutely. And that's why he's so relatable to so many people, and that's why eventually WWE had to pay attention to him. Dolph Ziggler, though, man, he's still getting bit pops. Not as much as, you know, Bryan or Punk would be, but he's still, like, the crowd just loves him no matter where he goes.
And how much of the fact that he's not getting the pops he is because people just know they don't mean anything. like with Brian and with Punk, eventually the cheers meant something. And this kind of ties into Scott's point of, you know, there's only a few guys people care about. I feel like, you know, part of that is legit. Part of it is because the people we try to care about, they just keep beating us down. They did that to some extent with Daniel Bryan, but you knew he was going places. But you look at a guy like Ziggler, I honestly think Ziggler could be maybe not quite as big as Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, but not that far below if they would just listen to the crowd and give them what they want.
I'll put him in that list.
Yeah.
Ben, I'll put him in that list because he does get when his theme hits, he gets a good pop, he gets a good reaction. I'll put Dolph Ziggler on that list.
But Scott, that's an easy one. I'll go to an extreme and say this: in 2011, when Madison Square Garden was interrupting rock interviews to chant "We want Ryder," the fact that they, you know, maybe Zack Ryder couldn't have hung at the top, but they didn't even try. Like that guy was as over as Daniel Bryan in 2011.
Do you remember that picture? Speaking of roster and young talent, do you remember that awesome picture?
Yeah, another one you're talking
that
about.
That they had.
It was all about
too. It was Punk, Brian, Ryder. It was
Cody.
Punk, Brian, Ryder, Cody.
I think Kofi and Evan Bourne, maybe.
Kofi Evan Bourne were the tag champs, and who was the Divas champ?
Beth was the Divas champ.
Boy, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But what Ben is saying, I think, is more of like a big overall topic where you go against you got the two different types of arguments. You go with the long-term plan. We have this idea. We want to go all the way through WrestleMania. We don't want to step on it at all. And then you have, you know, WWE always says, you know, Stephanie McMahon always says, we have the biggest focus group among all the entertainment companies because we have the largest audience and we can just listen to the audience. Is there a chance that once we get to April or January or February that we see some sort of an organic type of tilt or momentum towards one of these mid-card guys like, say, Dolph Ziggler or Cesaro or Dean Ambrose, where it convinces you almost in a little ways and starts creating that doubt in creative's mind? Maybe we need to veer away from what we had in mind and we have to do something different for WrestleMania, because I think there's a little chance of that, but I don't think in the terms of what we have with Brock Lesnar at the top.
I don't think they're going to do it.
But are there candidates that of people that are capable of doing that?
Maybe, but think about last year and the Bryan thing. If CM Punk didn't quit, would it have happened? It took a major star leaving the promotion for them to say, maybe we should listen. So no, I don't think that us just cheering rabidly for a guy will change their plans. I think that's one of the biggest cons they have, is they're very stubborn. And they get angry with the fans for not liking what they tell the fans to like.
Well, what if we get to the end of the year and Dean Ambrose is getting his name chanted every fucking night on television?
If Roman Reigns is who they want, then that's who they're going to give us. That's what I truly believe.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Unless someone like John Cena says, I quit, or the guy that they have, because I believe that never mind. I won't rehash this, but we can keep moving.
Now, I have read about the whole part-time thing. We're talking about who's going to face Brock in San Francisco. The roster is a little bit – there's management that's pissed off that there's a part-timer as champion. So there is – you're not the only one, Rish, overly upset about that.
The rumor is that there's a three-way pull apart. That Triple H wants Roman Reigns, Vince McMahon wants The Rock, and the fans want Daniel Bryan. Yep. And this is going to be the battle once we get to the Royal Rumble
or CM Punk.
Of who it's going to be.
Take either.
If
Punk
Bryan
is not coming, Punk is too busy calling his lawyers to get money out of Vince McMahon's pocket.
And Ben wants
Batista. He is not coming back.
Who do I want?
And Ben wants Batista. No. Batista just for the galaxy.
I'll tell you what, if he's dressed like Drax, that would be awesome.
It's the best shot they have.
If he gets his ass kicked like in Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think anybody's gonna watch it.
Alright, so the vacuum of power, the power situation right now is, I mean, how you want to talk about getting upset? Imagine your main event of WrestleMania is two part-time guys.
Yeah.
But again, that goes back to a debate. I won't say it's a debate. A discussion that Justin and I had about, Jesus, like 200 episodes ago. What is WrestleMania? Is WrestleMania a once a year standalone carnival festival of excitement and entertainment, and you put together a super Zoppo bang up show for that moment? Or is it one of the 12 pay-per-views and you need to further storylines, you need to have guys you're going to have after that show? Depending on what the philosophy of WrestleMania is how you book your card. Vince is treating it like the biggest thing of the year, We need to have the most bang for everybody's buck, whether it's $9.99 or $60, whatever the hell the case may be.
The grand finale.
Exactly. And you get Rock and Brock because that will bring the most money. Or do you have the Triple H philosophy, which is, yeah, it's a big show, but it's also a pay-per-view or a special event. And we need to continue because we're going to have life after this show. We need to further talent. That's why Roman Reigns belongs.
I think they found their way to do both. And WrestleMania is the big show, and the stories are the Raw after WrestleMania, which in itself has become a major show.
Right. Right. So we'll
continue. I feel like Raw is the festival, and WrestleMania is very vital to the storyline.
Oh. Well, obviously the carnival rides are broken then. all right. So – okay, so guys, great debate talking about the product. And of course, these topics always come up, as we continue on the show. So, all right, let's go back to the pros and cons game, but now we're going to switch gears and go from the product to everybody's favorite thing to either love or despise, the WWE Network. Now, for those, like pretty much all of us here, who woke up that Tuesday morning or Monday morning after the Elimination Chamber, took 4 hours to get it, and struggled with streams and this and that, and pay-per-view streams are still not exactly great. They're better, but a lot of it depends on your console. And Ben, you have been continuing your war with Xbox is like Carlos Colon and Abdul the Butcher. It's like a 37-year feud.
Yeah.
But you know, when I go to my buddy's house, I watch on Apple TV. His Apple TV's not bad. I have Amazon Fire. It's awesome. My computer, I've had no issues. Work either. Then content comes into play, and a lot of people piss and moan that there's not enough of this, and there's too much of that, and blah, blah, blah. There might be other issues. So let's start with JD. What is a pro? After 6 months, what is a pro of the WWE Network?
Biggest one to me is NXT, and it's not even a question. I think NXT,
I agree 100%,
has become the best weekly program we have in pretty much all of wrestling. That's the biggest one for me.
Mm. Willie,
is
NXT better than Raw?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
pretty sad.
For many reasons, the 3 hours thing, I can't get on it.
No, I can't.
I have to be totally honest. If it wasn't for this show, I probably would not watch Raw religiously. I watch it to keep up and be able to speak intelligently about it. And then usually, probably what I would do is have it on in the background if I was doing stuff. Like Ben had mentioned earlier on in the show, or I would wait till the next day and hear if there are any good matches and watch those matches. But NXT, it's not perfect by any means, but it's a nice, tight 50-minute show. It gives there's always a decent main event. It advances a story each week.
Yeah.
Everyone who is on the show has a story.
Yes,
exactly. Outside of the jobbers, which is what Raw is missing. Let's just throw these two people in the ring. There's a reason that they're in the ring. The Divas division has an actual storyline going on, and they're better performers than the ones who are on Raw.
I hate I don't like Bayley.
Oh no.
Then you're gonna love Takeover 2.
This four-way though looks like it's gonna be pretty badass though. What a combo.
It's fail when it comes to talent, it's fail safe.
I mean, Neville, Kid, Zane, and Tyler Breeze, Mr. Car Wash Cleaning Boots.
Mr. Great.
Where they get so much right with NXT is you could watch it for the very first time this week, and by the end of the episode, you know who those guys are.
Right.
And you know what their motivations are. You know what their characters are. Where if you turned on Raw and watched it this week, you might remember some names, but so many of those guys are just
like
bland and generic.
Yeah.
You might have a hard time telling who's the good guy and who's the bad guy, to be honest. I mean, the good guy on Raw this week said, "I'm going to sue you."
We're all stoked right now because we've got three blue chip studs waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Kenta.
Yeah, they got more.
Kenta,
coming.
Devitt, and my guy. I am absolutely stoked waiting for Steen. I am so ready for Steen.
The scuttlebutt is that Steen and Devitt are going to be a tag team.
That will be awesome. I want Kenta to come in. And you know what? I want all three of them to walk out one night on Raw, do what the Nexus did in 2010, and then have Punk come out after and
but
say.
But to speak more to speak to what JD said is that, like, I don't like Enzo Amore. I think he's kind of annoying. But when I see him, he's different. He has his own identity. He does his Long Island, you know, and then he's got his friend Colin Cassidy, and he does SAWFT soft. And, like, it's got its own identity, and that's cool. Do I have to like him? No. But he's not this generic, hey, let's just throw him out there like Damian Sandow, you know?
And then, of course, there's Ben's favorite NXT guy, Mojo Rawley.
No, Kalisto.
I like that's right. Raw has their own Mojo Rawley. It's Bo Dallas. All right, Willie, you're pro.
Am I pro for the network?
The network.
I like that it is very diverse. Mm-hmm. I like that it has. I think I don't know if they still do this, but in the first few weeks, they would put together like the most watched shows in the network, and who knows how legit it is? You know, it could be them just, you know, making it however they wanted it to. But right. For the most part, their top 10 shows were all very current. NXT, the pay-per-views, and then, like, your Legends House, that kind of stuff.
Right.
For me, like, especially at the beginning, I had a hard time figuring out what I wanted to tackle.
I know.
You know, I could go to that, and now I've kind of settled on, you know, really NXT is the focus. I'll watch the pay-per-view, the WWE pay-per-view, and then kind of, you know, maybe I'll pick a... You know, kind of started with NWA, kind of similar to what Scott, what you and Ben are doing, mm-hmm. only at a much slower level. Hmm. Or, you know, I'll pick up an ECW from 93 if I'm feeling crazy, you know, slowly work through those. It's so diverse. Like, for me, I'm not really going to be that into the reality, like the Legends House, some of the countdowns and stuff like that. But there's something for the old fan. There's something for the newer fans. There's something for the kids, the Slam City stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's decent. It's getting sure seems to be getting a lot of views.
Yeah, no, I've heard that the Slam City is very good. I mean, they make merchandise. I think they have T-shirts.
Yeah, I saw some toys at Target for them.
Yeah, and they have toys for it too. Yeah, I think that I agree with you on the diversity. I mean, some of the shows Countdown is just terrible. When they had that list of tag teams,
there were a couple that I liked.
That top 10 tag teams one was terrible.
Well, Infamous Gimmicks is really good.
That
was good.
But here's the thing, Scott. Are you saying it's terrible because you disagree with the ordering or you don't like the actual production of the show?
Oh, the production of the show is very good. The order.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't care about the show. I don't care about what's number one.
That order was terrible.
Yeah.
But
it's fun to watch.
Yes. The original programming is excellent. I don't think the other thing I love besides NXT, I love WrestleMania Rewind. Those are awesome. I've heard some complaints, like Justin and I have talked, and he thinks that they. The first couple were very like internal stories, like the WrestleMania 3 one, Hogan Andre talked a lot of behind the scenes stuff. The 14 one with Shawn and Steve had a lot of internal like scuttlebutt, and then they got very very kayfabe. Yeah, they got very kayfabe, but still though they were still really awesome.
Yeah,
Reesh, you're pro.
It's still the archives, and what I like about what the WWE does is that they have this really sophisticated self-awareness of their history. They don't just poo-poo on WCW and ECW and World Class and all. They really do try to make sure that you realize what these promotions had done in the past, some that worked and some they didn't. You can watch the YouTube stuff, and they'll show you different examples from different promotions that are non-WWE of things that worked, even though they do take their pretty little time telling you all these terrible things that WCW did. They did an entire episode of the really great series, The Monday Night War, where they talk about the success of the NWO, and they really go into very, very deep type of research about what worked and what didn't. And this is a 15-part thing. So we're not just going into like some sort of DVD release rehash thing where they talk about Monday Night Wars for 2 hours and bing, bang, boom, we're done. They're going all the way in. And that's another example of the fact that they embrace their history. They embrace what made WWE what it is, even if it means having to emphasize things that WWE had no control over in the wrestling business. And I think the fact that they're able to think out of the box and recognize non-WWE performers in that for footage that they own is a great thing. And the fact that they can implement that into the current superstars to talk about it on Countdown and WrestleMania Rewind and things like that, mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing. I love the inclusiveness of it.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that too. I like that. That's a good point. Benjamin?
You know, I was going to talk similar about what Steve said as far as the diversity. Actually, what I think of is almost the rabbit hole effect. Just the same as when I go on like Wikipedia and, you know, I'll look at one thing and that'll make me want to look at another thing. It's the same with the network. What I thought was going to be so overwhelming has turned out to be, I just never get bored. I always have something else I can go to. But since I think Steve covered that pretty well, I talk about something else that just came out to me, interestingly enough, as we're having this discussion, is the community aspect of it all. That we as wrestling fans, this is such a cool tool for us that, you know, we all have our friends who we may not have all watched the same stuff. Up until this point, you know, once a week you can maybe watch Raw together, you can talk about Raw the next day, but just the fact that we can have the talks we do on our Facebook group or on this podcast, or I can talk to my buddy at work, and we can just say like, hey, you know, we should both go home and watch, some 1996 ECW or 97 ECW pay-per-views, and then let's talk about it the next day. And I know everyone at Place B Nation has been doing that. Just the ability as fans that you can talk about stuff and you can recommend stuff to your friends that maybe you saw as a kid and they've never gotten a chance to see. Like I can, like my buddy at work watched, he's a little older than me, so he watched wrestling before me. Then I came in and watched my bit and then we both watched for the last few years. But I can tell him about stuff from the 90s. I'm like, oh, you got to go back and watch this. And he can tell me about stuff from a few years earlier than that and go, say, you got to go back and watch this. And there's actually a way to direct people to that now without having to go on a YouTube search or something like that. I think that's great.
Yeah. I think the pay-per-views, because, I mean, I was a WWF fan by nature pretty much my entire wrestling life. I mean, I did watch NWA on Saturday nights, but in the 90s, you know, I picked a side in the Monday Night War and I picked WWF and I stuck it out. But now it's like, wow, some of these pay-per-views, now that WWE, you know, that there's all these WCW shows, and that's why I'm watching them in order. I don't remember any of these 91s or, you know, I don't remember any of this stuff at all.
And they just put the first 2 years of Nitro out there.
Yep. Yep. And you know what I love about it? It creates stuff for Justin and I to do on the Place B podcast. We now have the Raw watching. We now have the SmackDown watching. We're going to create another one. That I'm keeping a surprise. We're going to do another one down the line. So that's another thing. So
Scott, just to go off that, that's some of the most fun I've had as a wrestling fan is watching those.
Yeah.
Like the Raw watches with you guys. Like I look forward to that all the time. Like we did the, you know, this past one on Monday, I didn't care about missing Raw. I was more excited to watch.
You can argue, Steve, that those two Raws were just as lousy as the one that was live.
Oh yeah, boy,
those two Raws
that.
Were dreadful.
You know what? They were more entertaining though,
but they were better because
they were lousy, but they were so different. You know?
Yeah, we found the Raiders guy, and for those that I'm glad, you know, if you haven't listened, definitely listen to the last episode of the Place B podcast if you don't know who we're talking about, because not everybody is L.A. Gore. So,
and that's that community aspect you're talking about, if. We were sitting around watching the Raw from this past Monday, it probably would have been more enjoyable for us if we were watching it all together as a group. Because if it got bad, we can riff on it. We can, you know, joke about it.
Right. Exactly. All right. Benjamin, give me a con. Do you have a con?
I do. I've been thinking about this. But this is – it's a little bit of a different direction because when we were first saying we were going to talk about the network, I was thinking – I think originally we had thought about how can they be more successful? That was kind of where we went off originally. So this is a con, but not so much about the product as much as how WWE is approaching it and why I think the numbers aren't quite where they want them to be.
Okay.
And this is a little experience from my day job. To give a point of comparison, you know, I work in the comic book industry where we have movies that are doing record-breaking numbers, but that's not helping us sell more comic books necessarily. And that's because the hardest thing to do with comic books, getting back to what we talked about during segment one about being a niche product in the entertainment market, is it's not a product that, you know, everyone readily embraces like primetime TV or something like that. I think one of the problems with WWE Network is they have this great product, but the way they're marketing it is they're basically selling it to the people who are already predisposed to buy it. Most of the advertising, you know, the incessant plugs on Raw, if you're watching Raw, you probably already have the WWE Network.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's not who they need to get, which is why it's somewhat frustrating.
Expanding your niche.
Yeah, the fact that
Ben, let me ask this, and then go back to your point. Have any of you seen a commercial for the WWE Network not on WWE programming?
Right.
Not once.
That's my point. And let's talk about the fact that in the 1990s, there were millions of people watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And when WCW went under, the ratings went down. Everyone thought, you know, everyone who watched WCW would go over to watch the WWF. And it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And we had a decade of what happened. It almost became like a great mystery. What happened to our lost brothers? What happened to those people who were watching Nitro? Where did they go? Because they didn't follow us. They just kind of went away. And they weren't wrestling fans anymore. But they're still out there somewhere, presumably. And presumably they still have a fondness for what they watched in the 90s. Or maybe someone who hasn't watched since the 80s has a fondness for that. Those are the people that I don't think have the network, but I don't think they're even aware the network exists. So that's my con in a weird sort of way, is that WWE is focusing so hard on thinking inside the box when it comes to advertising the network. They're doing all they know, and that's to push what they have as hard as they can on the platforms they have always used to push everything. And they're appealing to the same diminished audience that is not what it was 20 years ago. If they get out there in the world, more mainstream advertisements, more mainstream stories, you know, I didn't see any newspaper articles or things in Entertainment Weekly or anything like that. Don't you think there's a bunch of people who would be like, hey, I liked WCW back in the 90s. I'd like to watch those shows again. And then they order for a month and then they find all this other stuff and they get sucked back into wrestling. And that's not just how you improve the network. That's how you improve wrestling in general. So I guess my con is, I don't have a con about the network itself. I have a con in that, why are they not using it to improve the business and the state of the business and fandom in general?
Mm-hmm. I have an answer to that. I think what's wrong with the marketing standpoint is that they're so scared of losing their core audience when it comes to their network's subscriptions that they only want to worry about that right now before they look forward to the next step, which would be expanding it to more of the casual viewership, in which they would have to spend more money on advertising.
But don't you get the feeling they're never going to go there, Andrew? How long have they been pushing to the core audience? How long has that been around? It's been around over 6 months now.
I think they have this overlying fear that if they stop pushing and if they don't push harder and harder, that they're going to lose them. When the fact is, if they're hardcore fans enough, they're just going to stick around and order it anyway.
Yeah.
So
I agree. I think they're marketing to the wrong people.
It's a marketing misstep. You're right about that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's what I was talking to kind of Jordan earlier today. Like, in terms of what would it take to have the hardcore fans like us go away, like, what would it take you guys to stop subscribing to the network?
$15.99 a month.
I'll pay $20.
Yeah, I think I'd pay $15.
I can't do $14.99 a month.
For me, it was two things. It's one, it's the price. And two, if they were pressured because the numbers are lower than they want and they took some of the pay-per-views off. I don't think they'll do that because I think that they've already kind of alienated themselves from cable companies. So where else could the pay-per-views go? Mm-hmm. But if they tried something where WrestleMania suddenly was taken off or the big shows, that might do it. But
I don't think it'll be on
other than that, it's just price for me, really.
Yeah, price point, pretty much.
Yeah,
that's just when my wife tells me I can't have it anymore.
Steve, do you have a con?
I was so busy listening. Come back to me real quick. I had one and I forgot it.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
That point.
Did I
should go to Reece, Andrew? I guarantee he wasn't listening.
Reece, did I ask you for a con or did you piggyback Ben's? All right, go ahead.
I got two. One is more of a weak point. The other is a little stronger. The first one is more of like a worldview type of thing, which, I mean, it might not really – any wrestling fan that listens to this podcast is going to listen and say, oh, look at this philosophical bullshit, but I'm just going to give it to you anyway. We talked about the rabbit hole effect, which is the rabbit hole effect is like you go into something like, oh, I want to click this, and oh, I want to click this, and you just kind of get stuck into the minutia of it all. I think there is such thing as too much of a good thing. And I think the fact that we have so much available material on the network and that we're able to tap into it and just dig into it and watch every Clash of the Champions you want to watch and watch it and binge, I think the fact that you get stuck in your ways and in your viewing habits, and it's so scatterbrained with their schedule. Nothing is really set outside of two or three shows. And you kind of lose focus of the current product itself, which is a bad thing for WWE because that's the lifeblood of their of the content. I think that can be a bad thing for WWE as a company, not necessarily the viewer. The viewer wins out in the end. My second problem with it is that even though NXT has been their biggest success as a specific program on the network, I think the fact that they have been so good at establishing NXT as a brand puts more pressure on those performers to have to do things for NXT, not necessarily looking forward to move upward into the WWE. What I mean by that is that we know who Adrian Neville is. We know who Sami Zayn is. People who watch the network know who those people are. And is that a good thing when they move on up to the WWE and you recognize them and they have built characters? Yes, that's a good thing. But when it comes to NXT, I think what the problem is that it builds more pressure on them. And that was the problem with the original incarnation of NXT, that they put them out in arenas and left them out to die with a worser format. It was like a game show format. And they have this one, which is a weekly, you know, in its own bubble type of television show. But I think the fact that we're going to have to bank on this network or this program on the network to be good all the time because of how good it was at the outset, I think that's setting the expectations too high. I think it's this kind of shiny new toy mystique where we really like something and we want it to be great all the time, but developmental areas have highs and lows. And I just don't want to see the low points of NXT and watch people give up on it and never go back.
Mm-hmm. Willie, did you remember yours?
Yeah, and just to counter a little bit what Andy is saying, I think they're being really cautious with who they put out on the show. That's the one thing about just having the hour, is that there are a lot of guys in the pipe who have not been on the show at all and who are being completely protected. And I think he's injured right now, but Sami Callihan, Solomon Crowe, he's been there for a long time now. And you didn't see him. We haven't seen him. Sam Kalisto was
well. Apparently, Triple H is ditching that Solomon Crowe, gimmick.
Well,
hacker
that's one good thing that they have Triple H to make sure to see it through and say, look, don't push these guys to the moon yet. We need to be patient.
Right.
And don't just throw them out there as jobbers to someone else so that you kill them off. Like I feel like they're purposefully, and this is a pro, like hiring guys to be jobbers.
Oh yeah.
You know, so they're not killing, like, you know, putting Kevin Steen in this, you know, this is like a totally absurd example.
That would be devastating.
But yeah. here's a problem with that though. Are we getting to a point where we don't want to move guys up to the WWE because it weakens NXT?
No. Look at who they have coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, for example,
you lose Sami Zayn, you get Kevin Steen. Boom.
Yeah, like you have minor league baseball teams. Nobody cares when the minor league baseball playoffs are happening. If you want to move up your guy, you move him up. He's ready. It's over. No one cares about what the team does. That's kind of what NXT is supposed to be.
Breach the other part of the equation.
It is,
And I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think all your points on NXT are good. Is that you got to also remember, look at someone like Tyson Kidd, who was doing nothing on the main roster.
Yeah, he'd be nothing right now.
Yeah, but they said, and he's probably not headed back to the main roster, but they found a use for him. He's a main eventer in NXT. They can always do something like that. They have guys they're not using, you know, guys like Justin Gabriel, Tyson Kidd, guys who are skilled, but who have never quite hit it. Like, they can always bring them down to NXT to fill the gap while they're hiring somebody. That's a move they can make. You know, that was when they brought Brodus Clay down for a little while, I thought that was a great move. I thought that was going to rebuild him.
I agree.
So just because they jump someone up to the main roster, say they jump Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn up, maybe that just means, you know, this is not the best example. Maybe Zack Ryder comes down to NXT for a little while and he fills the gap while you wait for Prince Devitt to be ready to debut. Because you're losing guys doesn't necessarily mean, you know, they have to stay there forever.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like the NBA Developmental League. You got a lot of young guys that are not there yet, but they're figuring it out. And that's what the majority of NXT is. And then you got a lot of these veterans that are on the outs, and they're trying to get their way back in. And then and that's what you're talking about, reclamation projects. But can an NXT reclamation project like Tyson Kidd find success once again and rejuvenate himself on the main roster in WWE? 90%
so.
No. Yeah.
But I don't think that's a bad thing, because I think that makes him – he'll always be there for NXT.
Right.
Yeah, that's
and
good
I think
for
he's
NXT.
Great for NXT.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting close. JD, what's your con? Well,
did Steve actually say what his was?
I'll do my real quick.
Oh, did you?
No, I think really quickly, some of the design stuff is, and I'm not a graphic designer by any means, but just some of the back and forth between, I watch it on the computer a little bit, my phone mainly, and then my Roku stick. People have brought this up before, but like I can't pause and come back to it on my phone unless I leave it running in the background. I can do that on my Roku. I think there's chapters on the computer. There's not on the Roku. There's not on the phone. Some of that stuff I'd like to see cleaned up a bit. I don't have the slightest idea how to do it, but I feel with, you know, the people in place, like, you know, that's MLB that's doing that, right? That MLB company.
MLBAM.
Yeah. They have platform inconsistencies for sure.
Yeah, it feels like that could be done a lot better. And Netflix, obviously, a way bigger company, but you know, you can do that. You know, your phone and the switch back to, you know, your TV, and you'll keep your place. And I have to do that with a pay per view. You know, I don't have 3 hours to sit down in a row to watch stuff. So I'll watch 15 minutes of NXT while my kids are falling asleep, and then come back to it the next day, maybe in between appointments at work, or like on a lunch break or something like that. And then I have to like scroll through on my iPhone with my thumb at the right speed to try to find the spot. It's a pain.
Yes, that is tough. Although I'll tell you, the Amazon Fire TV does a pretty good job. And so they got to be more consistent with the little blips on the timeline. They definitely need to be more consistent with that, because in terms of show by show, like yesterday when I was watching Super Brawl 2, the blips were on there. Today I watched Wrestle War, they weren't. But they need to be more consistent. The only consistency is in WWE, and I wonder if they'll do that when I'm on the timeline, when I get to him in WCW, is they don't put a blip for any Benoit matches. You could watch him.
Yeah.
But you have
if
to
you search his
him.
Name, nothing comes up.
Right. And if his matches, you can always tell, because when he's on a show, you see this gigantic gap.
Yeah.
This gigantic piece of time.
WrestleMania 20, like, ends at the last dot is one spot, and then there's, like, another hour and a half.
Yeah. It's pretty much, I think the match before that, I think that's Taker Kane. And yeah, then, and then it's pretty much that the whole way.
And so, okay. Jordan, what's your con?
Oh,
gosh,
it's my job.
Yeah, great hosting, Rish.
Fucking smartass. JD, what's your con?
You know, it's funny. I was gonna kind of say Steve's is it needs to be uniform across. You know, it's so weird to me that if I watch it on my PlayStation 4, it looks different than my PlayStation 3. You know, not looks different, but little things like that, like the chapter marks and stuff. And by the way, here's a con. The chapter marks shouldn't have a mark for when the match ends and telling us who wins and how they won.
Yeah, I don't like that. Oh, yeah, that's
I hate
pain in the neck.
That so much.
Yeah. That means you're going to cheat and have to look ahead, and who wants to do that?
Right. One that I would say, though, and I think it's an easy fix, you know, and I know they laid off a bunch of people. Get an intern who loves wrestling that would do this for free. I think they're missing out on the live stream by not having scheduled programming. You know, they have some stuff scheduled, but why can't they have all day long a running schedule?
It's scatterbrained. There's no
It's really scattered, you know. Some things you know are going to be on at certain times, like main event and NXT and stuff like that, but it just seems like it'd be such a simple thing to do, like Mondays are WCW days, Tuesdays East, you know, something really simple to where if you do turn it on, you don't want to go down that rabbit hole. You just say, okay, what's playing right now, instead of like SummerSlam 12 times in a row. You know, which it seems like is what it is sometimes.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a really minor complaint. I think they've addressed a lot of the major issues, and a lot of the stuff has been fixed. If we were talking 3 or 4 months ago, we'd have some big cons that we could all talk about, you know.
Right.
But that's really the one to me, is the live feed is almost wasted.
Yeah. And Scott, I'll give you one really quick that I really love that they just added on. I think it's called Vintage Vault, where they just do individual matches.
Video Vault.
And that's a great idea, because let's be honest, wrestling fans want to watch great singular wrestling matches that you might not be able to find buried into all the pay-per-views. And for example, Punk and Cena on Raw in February. You could probably find that episode of Raw in the archives, but it's great that you can just kind of, oh, there it is, and then I can just click on it and enjoy the hell out of this great match. And I think they need to expand that library.
First off, Vintage Vault is what Justin and I do.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Willie, will you give this guy some Ritalin, for Christ's sakes? Jesus.
Hey, what is going on here?
Exactly. Guys, this was awesome. Been a pleasure, as always, and we'll always talk the network, because it's our little baby. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and guess what? For the schedule worked out again. We get to preview a pay-per-view because I believe our next show will be the Wednesday before Night of Champions. So we'll do a little preview. We will have a special guest, Mr. Riche, because he spoke for 50 people tonight. Gets the Sid treatment. So you get to breathe because I need you for an NBA preview anyway. So we will have a special guest in 2 weeks, and we will preview Night of Champions, and we might talk about some... but maybe not. So, for Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Riche, Ben Morse, I'm Scott Criscola. You've been in the main event on all these shows, and you've shined. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey guys, I have some Dixie Carter topless nudies. If y'all, I have a username that you can send it to.
Rich, can you just become a part timer already?
I got my grub on, but didn't dig out. Finally got a call from a girl I wanna dig out. So hooked it up for later as I hit the dope. Thinking, will I live another 24? I gotta go, cause I got me a drop top. And if I hit the switch, I can make the ass drop. Had to stop at a red light, looking in my mirror, not a jacker in sight. And everything is alright. I got a beat from Kim, and she can fuck all night. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which part are y'all playing basketball? Get me on the court and I'm troubled. Last week fucked around and got a triple-double. Freaking niggas every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day. To the pad and hit the showers. Didn't even get no static from the cowards. Cause just yesterday them boos tried to blast me. Saw the police and they rolled right past me. No flexing, didn't even look in a nigga's direction as I ran the intersection. Went to show dog's house, they was watching you on TV raps. What's the haps on the craps? Shake em up, shake em up, shake em up, shake em. Roll em in a circle of niggas and watch me break em with the 7, 7-Eleven, 7-Eleven, 7 even backdoor little Joe. I picked up the cash flow, then we played bones, and I'm yelling domino. Plus nobody I know got killed in South Central LA. Today was a good day. My nigga's house paid. Picked up a girl, been trying to fuck since the 12th grade. It's ironic, I had the boo, she had the chronic. The Lakers beat the Supersonics. I felt on the big fat fanny. Pulled out the jammy and killed the poop nanny. And my dick runs deep, so deep, so deep. Put her ass to sleep. Woke her up around 1. She didn't hesitate to call Ice Cube the top gun. Drove her to the pad and I'm coasting. Took another sip of the potion. Hit the 3-wheel motion. I was glad everything had worked out. Dropped her ass off and then chirped out. Today was like one of those fly dreams. Didn't even see a berry flashing those high beams. No helicopter looking for a murder. 2 in the morning, got the fat burger. Even saw the lights of the Goodyear blimp, and it went Ice Cube's a pimp. Drunk as hell, but no throwing up. Halfway home, and my pager's still blowing up. Today I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say it was a good day.
Thinking about.